listening to Tidings from Hazel Khan. We're going to be talking about begging and beggars, and we're going to ask some very big questions. For example, is begging a profession? Is it a misfortune? A scourge? A spiritual practice? Or possibly an industry? Because I was born in India and spent my formative years there, begging was a normal part of my environment. When I used to go to the market with my mother or to the Anarkali bazaar with my father, I saw beggars every day, and although I found them annoying and would always stare at those with especially startling deformities, such as grotesquely twisted limbs or too many fingers or tiny microencephalitic heads, I didn't feel responsible for their misfortune, nor did I think I could or should improve their futures. Sometimes, against my mother's wishes, I would hand out coins, knowing that this would embolden other beggars to run towards me, extending their hands and whining, "Paisa, Memsab!" But by then, I felt I'd done my good deed for the day and could convincingly wave my empty hands or pockets to demonstrate I'd nothing left to give. These are my memories as a 7 or 8 year old child, but their enduring clarity has left me curious to hear the stories brought back by American visitors to India, to hear how they react to the poverty in general and to beggars in particular. This was often a very defining part of their experience. Of course, beggars can be found in virtually every country on our planet. I'm also most curious about what it's like to be a beggar, who becomes one and who remains one, and how beggars and begging fit into Indian society today. Do the beggars of Mumbai or New Delhi have anything in common with the homeless of New York City? That's the thing with the subjects I choose for Tidings. Before I know it, I'm stumbling around in some unexpectedly deep, complex, mysterious, weird corner of the universe. Begging has always been with us, and probably always will be. It may even compete for primacy with the world's other oldest profession. Yes, begging is considered a profession, not only by many of those who practice it, but by academic researchers too. A blogger from Ghana describes begging as one of the fastest growing sectors of the country's economy. That pronouncement certainly gave me pause. Perhaps it's time to rethink begging. Should I be gloomily realistic and propose that with the economy being what it is these days, we may want to consider begging as a viable emerging career alternative? If not on the streets, then at least to join the swarms on the internet. The way people feel about beggars seems to broaden the more they've been exposed to begging in their lives. On first contact, they take it very personally, almost as if they themselves are the victims. They experience confusion and fear, especially when confronted and surrounded by a number of clamoring beggars. Greater exposure to beggars over time leads to self-analysis. People ask, "What is my contemptuous, fearful rejection of beggars doing to me and my soul?" Amy teaches high school math in New Jersey and has a rather pragmatic attitude towards beggars. She says she feels no obligation to give money to either beggars in India or to the homeless in New York City. Compassion, yes, and food or small useful gifts, perhaps, but not money, and then only to adult women, not to children, although this will vary with her mood.
The older women some were on the streets, but they didn't necessarily target the travelers or the tourists. It was really just anybody going by. They just put their hand out, and if you helped them, you helped them, and if you didn't, you know, they didn't yell at you, or they didn't. They were very kind and very, and almost seemed zen-like. It was a way of life for them, but it wasn't. It didn't interfere with people passing by. The cows were the most annoying beggars, I guess you'd say. They expected handouts.
The cows?
The cows, and they would actually come up to you and nudge you and until you gave them something. So they were the most annoying. And
what did you give them?
Food. They were the most aggressive. You had to give them food or something or try and get away from them because they would just continue to nudge you until you gave them something.
That's not what one usually thinks of as a beggar, so that's interesting. Cows, yeah.
Right, right.
How do you see the ones that are sitting passively sort of at the side of the road with a tin cup? How do you, you don't see that as begging, but as, you don't have a word for it?
Needing help. Usually they were the more elderly. And I know that in India, usually the family is who takes care of the elderly. To me, that seems as if something happened to their family, or somehow they had become estranged, or something physical had happened to them, and they lost their way of life.
Rather than that it was a way of life, the begging.
Right. Mm. Rather than, yes, that being their primary. Now, the children, I know that was their primary way of life, and that I would not give to the children any money, because I hoped that they would somehow be able to better themselves if they realized that begging isn't working.
You think begging would encourage them to continue begging?
Yes. I think if more people give them money, that'll just enable them and encourage them to continue that lifestyle. I don't feel an obligation to help everybody, but I do feel if I can help somebody, make somebody smile, and I don't think giving them money is the best way to help them, but if I can give them either food or give them, like I said, soap or something like that, perhaps that would help one person. I feel obligated to tip in this country, but I don't feel obligated to give to beggars.
Isabella, a high school senior from Long Island, New York, describes her first visit to India a year ago when she was 17. You'll hear her struggle with what the right thing to do is, unsure whether giving to a beggar is a good thing or a bad thing. Her heartfelt conclusion that she truly doesn't know may also be the inside story in broader philosophical and public policy debates about poverty and its solutions in think tanks and NGOs around the world.
It was just really shocking when I went, because everyone has an idea of India as just being culture and rich colors and good food, but when I went there, it wasn't just like the food and culture. It was also just the poverty is everywhere. And it was just really shocking to go somewhere and have some religion still really be the base of everyday life and have religion. It was just a huge culture shock when I went. And I wasn't expecting all the poverty at all. It was really hard to be around beggars because, first of all, they're everywhere in India. And if you give any person food, money, anything at all, you will have about 50 children surround you. You might get killed. If you're a woman, you might be raped. I mean, it's not, you can't fall into the whole, like, begging. You have to be cold when you're there, because if you're kind and you give something or give them enough attention, you're actually doing yourself more harm. Do I think it helps? It depends. I honestly think you don't know, because if I give them money, like, there's a reason they're on the streets. And if you give them money, like to a child, they give the money to the parents and the parents do whatever they want with it. And it could be drugs. It could be anything. You really don't know. So I don't know if it's a good or bad thing.
I mean, maybe that is the answer. It's impossible to know. It's impossible to always have the answer to something, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I wondered if maybe one gets used to beggars and develops a more resigned attitude over time. So I emailed Midge, a school friend, an old India hand, born and raised there and currently on sabbatical in Bangalore. I asked her how she and her husband experienced beggars and how they behave when beggars come up to them asking for money. Midge's emailed words are read here by Patty Gregory.
Here's what I think about beggars. Thank goodness there are so many fewer, but it is because of more social control and unfortunately not because there are fewer needy people, alas. When I encounter a beggar, I do the very thing that I hate. I pretend they're not there. I dehumanize them by not acknowledging their presence. I think the problem with the beggars is that they are asking for something which most of us know is totally inadequate to solve their problems. Since we don't want to answer yes to their pleas, we prefer to ignore them than try to reason with them or to convince them that when we say no, we mean it, and it's for a reason. My favorite beggar story comes from a New York subway. One hungry and homeless man came through the car asking if could anyone spare him a sandwich. He also had some hungry friends in case he received more than one sandwich. Well, I had put a granola bar in my purse for my lunch, and I decided to give it to him. He thanked me warmly. He worked his way to the end of the car, and then he came back. He quietly handed me my granola bar and said he appreciated the thought, but he was missing too many teeth to be able to eat it. It was a very satisfying exchange between human beings, which raised my consciousness as well. Byron says he hates beggars because he can't help them, and it makes him feel like a rat.
Another friend, Milda, had visited the holy city of Varanasi on the Ganges River, where her terrifying experiences with beggars have left her not just with vivid memories, but also with new resolve. She tells me, "If I would go back, I would go back with a different mindset. It is I who failed the poor, not they who failed me. I was not prepared, and I should have been." However heartfelt these Western views are, they do not begin to chronicle the many tentacled position that begging actually occupies in the narrative of Indian culture and history. For a more nuanced understanding, I wanted to speak to native-born Indians. Here I must acknowledge Skype, my snowball mic, and call recorder software, without whom Tidings and I would never be anything like as globally nimble as we are. First, I call Mr. Swaminathan, or Swami as he asked me to call him, in Chennai in southern India, where he conducts motivational and communication workshops. I came across a satirical article he'd written in which his purpose was to reframe beggars as people with skills. They understand site selection, for example, by choosing the right place and the right time. They are skilled at, and here I quote, practicing the art of sustained irritation until the almsgiver breaks down and puts money in the begging bowl. They also know how to network to identify clients and how to learn the latest techniques from their colleagues. These are all skills that could be applied to more productive ends. Swami, his voice amplified by passion and distance, demands that politicians and society accept responsibility by creating dignity for beggars through viable jobs. Instead of patronizing the beggar, he says, persuade the politicians.
Please, when you see a person, don't just put, 1 rupee or one Dutch mark or a dollar. Please don't do it. Think about why this guy is out there. the moment I see a person is highly professional, I know people who are made because they found it convenient to be there because they lost their jobs, they lost their families, they lost society, but their professionalism and the kind of involvement they showed, for me it was an eye-opener because these guys don't have a right to be there. They are forced to be there. We don't want people to be out there asking for hands, asking for jobs, asking for things, which is a basic dignity, which is a basic right. We as a society, right from whether it is Iraq or whether it is US or anything, people have a right to life, people have a right to job, and let us not treat them as beggars.
We're talking about beggars and begging on WPKN Radio. This is Hazel Khan and Tidings. While researching beggars and begging for this Tidings program, I stumbled across what its editor claims is the largest personal blog on the web, citing not only its 4 or 5 million page views a month, but also the more than 100 person years it represents of stories, commentaries, and photographs from his India-based family. Vikas Kamat, a computer professional living in Alabama, created his own software in 1994 to build this family blog. In an article written by his father before his death and translated by Vikas, we learn about the varieties of beggars. Donors need beggars, Vikas explains, to allow them to practice humility and to provide them what he calls a fast track to heaven, where they can earn punya, or divine credits, sort of like the Jewish concept of mitzvah. In other words, the beggar-donor relationship is symbiotic, with a spiritual rationale, not merely a transfer of money from one person to another. We hear Vikas describe other aspects of Hindu ritual, such as learning how to beg on entering the monkhood, or taking a vow to beg for, say, one day a week as an exercise in humility. To become a successful beggar requires many skills and props, including acting, performance, storytelling, fortune-telling, wardrobe design, and the training and outfitting of animals with their decorative dress. Looking at a beggar's life from the inside like this makes it appear suddenly colorful and a lot less drab, almost enviable, at least for a short stint.
The variety is, you know, like I said, sometimes it's temporary. You may have to beg. For example, one of the rituals in Indian culture is called as like the monkhood, entry into the monkhood. And one of the first things that you're supposed to do, even though you're a rich man's son, is to beg. So you are taught how to beg, even just for a few hours. So that's a temporary begging.
And that's still going on now, would you say?
Yes, absolutely. Every Hindu custom, if you go to a Hindu, what they call the ordaining ceremony, part of the ceremony is to beg, where the boy, typically the boy, he's made to wear simple clothes, just one pair of clothes, and then he's supposed to go from guest to guest to guest asking for money or gifts. So that's part of the, that happens a lot. It happens in every Hindu family. I just want to tell you about how the begging is of different kind. One is what I call a ritual begging. For example, this is a ritual begging. Another is a temporary begging where I give you an example of people taking a vow to beg for one day of the week. You know, I'll beg on every Saturday lunch or a Sunday dinner, I'll beg, they'll say.
In return for something or just for the practice?
Just to develop humility. Just as a vow they took on as a promise to the favorite deity. Another idea of temporary begging is truly circumstantial, you know, somebody lost money on a train station and they want a bed to go home. So they are the temporary kinds of begging. And coming about the professional begging, many times what happens is people who start begging as a circumstantial situation, they realize that this is actually a good profession and they continue to do it. They are the professional beggars, and there are several kinds of them. People who entice sympathy to get money, you know, so these people wear torn clothes, act as if they're hungry or they have a disease, anti-sympathy to, and typically children and women fall in this category. There's other guys who are performers, or I would call, they provide some entertainment or something in return for that gift that they seek. Because one of the questions you ask is, are beggar psychologists? So there are a lot of beggars in India who pretend to be fortune tellers. They'll tell you your future, or they'll say they'll cure a disease, or, you know, they provide something in return for the money they seek.
When I asked the question, are they psychologists, what I meant is, are they able to understand human beings? You know, are they understand enough about the human mind?
Because, yeah, I think so, because in the next question, when the part of the previous question where you asked, is it an art? I'm not sure I can answer that, but it definitely is a skillful activity. It requires skills, both in terms of science and art.
What kind? Can you talk about that a bit more, give some examples?
When a person goes out on begging, you know, they have to pick up a spot. A good place, if you're seeking for food, is just outside a restaurant. People, as you come out of a restaurant after a good meal, you are unlikely to shun a request from a hungry person who's asking for food. Also, some element of acting is also involved, because you have to pretend that you're hungry even though you may not be, because just the previous guest paid you to eat. But again, then when the next guest comes, you have to pretend again that you're hungry and that you have gone hungry for the last 2 days. So there's some element of acting involved. If you are going with the entertainment, you know, you have to be dressed to entertain them. Some beggars even have tools, you know. They may have a bird or a monkey or the fortune-telling cards, you know, the parrot cards.
Is it a good business to be a beggar? Would you recommend begging to people?
I would not recommend it, but once in a while, and this is the unfortunate part of it, once in a while the press, Indian press, will report stories about a beggar who died rich. Because many of the beggars don't even have a place to keep the money they save. They are vagabonds, many times they don't have houses. So once in a while you see the Indian press a story about how a beggar had saved so much money and died. But that's just a once in a million case that is not common. And then that story gets sensationalized and people start looking at beggars with suspicion.
As you point out in the article, they also don't have too many expenses. So it's all income in a way.
That is correct. It's all income. So to answer your question, do I recommend begging as a profession? No, I would not recommend because it's exposed. Your whole life is exposed to diseases, violence. There's no safety of any kind.
However, beggars are not doing nearly as well now as they once did.
50 years ago, people, if you read autobiographies, there's a lot of people who actually got their education through begging. You know, the schools were not available. They would go to like a city which had a school. And all the only income or only way they could survive or get education was to beg. They would have a specific houses they would beg. You know, Monday here I will have lunch at this house, Tuesday at that house, Wednesday at that house. So the only way they sustained themselves was through begging. And also in the Indian culture, ego or pride is considered a bad trait. And begging was supposed to cure that. As you know, it's difficult for people to go and ask for help, right? You know, so the begging is supposed to cure that ego or that pride that's inherent in humans.
With humility, I guess it brings in humility.
Absolutely, yes. So that's why it was an honorable thing to do at that time. And then, of course, over a period of time, it got commercialized, I'll say 1970s, 80s. And then it became a profession where it got associated with lazy people who didn't want to work. So that's what has happened. And, of course, the poverty contributed a lot to it. So it's hard for, if you go to India today, it's hard for you as a tourist or even as a citizen, the person who's begging for help, is he a professional beggar or is he a circumstantial beggar? It's hard to tell.
So does that mean, you know, when it was honorable, was it then closer to what maybe a monk, like in Thailand or in Burma, we've seen all these monks, you know, in their robes, or a sadhu in India? Well, it was closer to that, and now it's closer to I don't know, criminals or something? I don't know.
Yes, it is. And even it's not that the sadhu attitude is not there today. In fact, a lot of people in Indian culture, you know what a vow is, right? You know, they will make a promise to their favorite deity. You know, let's say somebody's having a bad disease that is not curable, and they'll say a vow, you know, if I get cured of this ailment, or if I have a male child, or if I get married, or whatever wish they have, they'll say, if their desire is fulfilled, they'll take a vow saying, I'll beg in the name of Lord for a week. They'll take a vow like that, and that's still common. So, you know, they may be a professional, you know, software engineer, but he will beg for a week and make a living that way to fulfill that vow. So it's deeply ingrained in the Indian culture to beg.
So if it's the software engineer who's got a disease and he says, for a week I will, you know, be a beggar, is that what he's, to humiliate, be humble? So then that's an honorable kind of begging, I suppose, because he's not doing out of laziness. Since those halcyon days, and in Vikas's words, due to an increase in mankind's selfishness and small-mindedness, the beggar community feels they are not able to make a living. Another factor is the institutionalization of government departments designed to eliminate or relocate beggar communities. Not a good omen if you're thinking about begging as a career track, should the apocalypse appear more imminent. But then there's always the internet. I wanted to know how Vikas, as an Indian, thinks about those visitors to his country who are overwhelmed and horrified by the beggars and the poverty they witness. It's a good question, to which Vikas says there is no binary answer. It's part of life, it's part of India, it's something he grew up with, but it's also a sensitive and controversial subject and a dilemma. Whatever their personal attitudes to begging are, everyone I spoke to agrees that supporting beggars does very little to help them and only adds to the social problem. If we want a beggar-free world in the world as it is today, skill training and job creation must replace the tin cup as income and the street as home. The question then becomes how to replace all those good karma chips and place in heaven tokens and all that soft-hearted guilt with tough love. I have another contrarian question. I want to know, in a democracy, which India is, don't beggars have a right to choose their profession? What gives us the right to take it away from them, or to relocate them out of sight so they won't offend the tourists? After all, they are supporting themselves. We've just spent half an hour deep in the complex world of begging and beggars. And although WPKN is not in begging mode today, sustaining ourselves is always on our minds. So I thought I'd just mention that going to the donate button on WPKN.org might actually be a fitting end to our time together. Tidings from Hazel Khan is produced by Tony Ernst and heard on the second Wednesday of the month. This tidings is sadly dedicated to Patty and to Midge, both of whom were wonderfully alive when the program was first broadcast.